college, live north of La Crosse, out in the country, and have become good friends with Bryn, and we have similar hearts in wanting to serve people, and she asked me to talk on a couple subjects in that regard. One of the things that I'd like to begin with is that, as we talked about before, negative things often turn out to be some of the greatest blessings in your life. And in this case, having been involved in the Vietnam War in 1968, and I lost one out of every 20 of my classmates killed from West Point, one out of six classmates wounded or maimed, and many of us have post-traumatic syndrome disorder, and then you find out about how the war was unnecessary and was politics. And the good part of that, and you can imagine the horrors of it, but the good part of it is it caused me to search for the meaning of life at a greater depth, much greater depth than I ever would have otherwise, or even with most people in life, unless they've gone through a very horrible experience where everything they believed in is pulled out from under them like a rock, then you may not be so inspired to search for the meaning of life. And of course, because of war, you can't imagine that there's a God that allows people to be killing each other, where the Vietnamese are married and they have children, they have a wife and they have parents, and many of them are out there fighting simply because the government told them so. Some are indoctrinated, and it's the same thing here. You know, I was recruited as an athlete out of Iowa, a wrestler out of Iowa, to wrestle at West Point, and I'd never heard of the place back then, but the coach asked me to check into it, and that's where I ended up going. Never did I ask, am I going to be involved in a war? All I really knew is that my education would be paid for if I was able to make it through. Then I'd have a college education, and I was the oldest of five children of a dysfunctional family, so that's all I was thinking about. And then by the time I graduated in 1966 and had to go to Airborne Ranger School in Vietnam, everything changed. But it turned out to be a blessing because I had this tremendous burning desire to find out what life was all about, because I couldn't understand how wars and people killing each other can be accepted in the universe. So everything I believed in, Bryn, was gone. It was just like I was just born as an adult, and I had to search out everything all the way, just because my parents had a certain brand of car, that doesn't mean that I'm going to necessarily have that brand. But it really went towards what is the universe all about, and what is there really a God? And it was just like I was out of orbit, and I didn't want to go back to the same orbit I was in, but I wanted to get in some orbit, and with the hope of finding peace and happiness. So the war was a blessing to me that way, and gave me a burning desire to find out what life was all about. And one of the first things I learned, which is common knowledge, but is important here, is that people's behavior, a lot of time, is affected by some type of fear. And there can be wrong fear, good fear, but in my research, I concluded that there's two types of fear. If there's a snowstorm out, you have a fear of going out in a snowstorm. If you happen to be out in the woods and around here now, as you probably heard, Bryn, we have bears, and coyotes, so we'll be fearful that one of them didn't get us or our dog, you know, a little poodle. So that's one type of fear. The second type of fear has to do with a spiritual relationship. And that's one of the things that was very difficult for me at first, is taught that God is supposed to be your friend and so forth, and I just was really struggling in that area. And I'm going to come back to that area, a little bit of fear in relation to God, in a few moments, but there are, when it fits in to what points I'm trying to get across. But my research also caused me to, in trying to understand how to handle fear in relationship and love with God, I did some research and basically realized that there's two types of animals on Earth, and outside of humans, there's animals that live by instinct, and that's very easy to understand. But humans have freedom of choice, and that's wonderful that God made us that way, but freedom of choice is wide open, and most people, or I should say many people, don't even realize they have a freedom of choice, and they just kind of flow through life, and they cannot control their thoughts. They don't even realize that they have any way of doing that, and they basically think they're destined to be what their family was and so forth, but there is freedom of choice, and freedom of choice is a wonderful thing if you can make the right decisions in that regard. In other words, if you want to do what is right in life, you begin to realize that being around a certain type of people affect you in a good way or a bad way, the things you read, the things you see, and so forth. The movies you see help direct you in one direction or another. And eventually you begin to realize that I can control my environment. If I want to be a certain way, then I try emulating a certain way. And it's the truth that we become like the people around and the thoughts that people have and so forth. So this became very exciting to me, Brian, to realize that we had this freedom of choice, but to realize that we really can dictate what we're going to be if we make wise decisions. I read a book by a very great man, and he was in the war, and he was in the concentration camp, and he was about ready to be killed, and he started thinking about what it would be like if he survived the war. And this book is called Man's Search for Meaning by a man by the name of Viktor Frankl. F-R-A-N-K-L. And he was a psychiatrist before the war, a psychologist, both or one or the other. And so it was natural for him to think about certain things. And so he was about ready to be killed because he couldn't get off the ground. And then he started thinking about what it would be like if he survived the war, and he was lecturing on what he learned from the war and what he learned from being in the situation that he was. And since he was thinking about giving the speech in the idea of helping and serving other people, something magnificent happened. He was able to stand up. And when he didn't have the normal strength, he was able to stand up and go back to work and somehow survive. And he's got a very famous quote. It's the greatest freedom we have is our freedom to choose our attitude regardless of the circumstances. Greatest freedom we have is our freedom to choose our attitude regardless of the circumstances. And so he wrote this book, became a famous lecture in life, and many people that write motivational books or give motivational, inspirational talks, they Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning. And that book really inspired me, Brent. The greatest freedom we have is our freedom to choose our attitude regardless of the circumstances. So there's never a problem that's too great. There's no circumstances that we have to give in to. We can choose how to think. And that was like a giant step forward. We can choose how to think. How many people realize that? Very few people realize it. And to be able to put it into practice, even on a small scale, is a wonderful, wonderful thing. And then I remember from high school and college, where you learn psychology and so forth, and at that time, back in the 60s, they said, genetics overrules environment. Genetics determines more about what you're going to be and how you're going to think than environment. Well, that has changed over the years, and now they don't say that in general. And like many of us, we discovered it on our own that it's not true. We can change by changing our environment. And what a revelation that was. Because coming from a family that was dysfunctional, I had a poor self-concept of myself. I was made fun of as a child. Not all the time, but some of the time. And it was one of the most horrible experiences in my life. And to be affected by that the rest of your life is not uncommon. Even to this day, it stirs emotions just as great, if not even more, than thinking about the Vietnam. But one of the things that I learned through that is that by going through a horrible experience, we can better relate and show kindness and empathy to people that are also going through a similar experience, because they'll know that we feel similar to what they feel, and they can relate to us, and they can benefit from that. So in my case, I had talked about this on the video, but just touching on it briefly, I stood up for other kids whenever they were made fun of. And it was an automatic thing. And so out of that hardship, I became a person through the mercies of God, which I didn't understand was involved at all, a person who's kind and has that towards other people. And then I had a very strange thing happen, Brent, that I don't think I shared with you before, is that between my 6th grade and 7th grade year, I had a dream. I can remember it just like yesterday. On this dream, on the farm that I used to work at when I was in elementary school, Art Nelson's farm, he had a tractor there. And the tractor wasn't working right in the dream, and he called a mechanic. The mechanic came out there and adjusted something like the carburetor. I'm not very mechanical. And the tractor turned the key and it started running properly. And he adjusted a few things, and it was ready to go back to the field working. And in the dream, it came to me that people are the same way. People are the same way. You just got to adjust the right things. And what is the right thing? How you think. How you think is the right thing. And I learned that the heart is more spiritually connected, and the heart needs to overrule what you're thinking if there's ever a conflict. If there's ever a conflict between what your heart tells you to do and what your thoughts are, you always follow your heart, because your heart is connected spiritually in the right direction. Your mind can be like a feather in the wind, depending who you're around, what thoughts you're having, what you've just seen. And so that was a revelation that came out of that dream. And in that dream, it came to me that basically people are lazy overall. And you don't have to be greatly gifted. Because I always scored low in all these standardized tests in elementary school. I was in the worst reading group. I could hardly read. Had a poor self-concept. I couldn't understand why people could raise their hand when the teacher asked the question so rapidly, because I didn't even understand the question, and so forth and so on. But that dream took me from one side of the valley to the other side of the valley. And it caused me to change my thinking to some degree. It was the foundation that caused me to read books like Jim Rohn and things like that. would love me. So hardship brings on good things. And so out of that, my life changed dramatically. It didn't necessarily become easier, but I began to understand that when difficulty comes along, it's for our own good. It is absolutely for our own good. And as I said in the video, I learned to write down at least 10 things a day that I'm thankful for, review before I go to bed at night, and because we think about when we sleep, about what we think about. When we go to sleep, we think about that almost all night long. Our subconscious either builds it up or takes it away. So we feel better or worse depending on what we're sleeping. So it was like my whole life was beginning to change because of the dream and some of the things that I developed when I was younger. And I'm kind of skipping around, Brent, but I'm just letting the words come out as they come to my heart. And so as a youngster, there was a certain level of development that I knew I could control the thinking and so forth. But after the Vietnam War, it was such a traumatic experience. Even though I still had those understanding and qualities, I couldn't find peace, and I had bitterness and so forth. And that's where I went to the next stage, to find out who is the creator of the universe. Is there a creator? Why would he allow these things to happen? And I went on a journey and did a lot of soul searching, went through a lot of disappointments, and found out that there's more people that don't care than do care about you, and finally met an individual that truly cared about my heart breaking and shared with me that there's a God and that we should try to please him. And I went to many churches and many situations and didn't feel comfortable in organized religion. These are some of my own opinions. I believe that there's people that love God in all religions of the world and all denominations of the world. But I had to find my little groove in life. And so I started worshiping in the homes with people that had gone through traumatic experiences like I had in the war and so forth. Now we're going to get back to what I had referred to before as far as fear. We know what it means to fear animals. We've all heard stories or read books about a child that fears their mom and dad, but they love them very much. They call it tough love. And so because they loved you so much, they were strict with you. That's not common in today's culture. It used to be if a child got in trouble at school, they were in double trouble when they got home. Now, in many cases, not all cases, if they get in trouble at school, then it's the teacher's fault, it's the school's fault. Totally different atmosphere. Well, that applies to life and one's relation to God. And, getting eventually around to the original question you asked me about how does a person keep themselves in the right place as far as
that moment, Brad, I felt like a pin stuck into a balloon, and I almost collapsed to the floor. And I knew what had happened. All those years, through his mercy, had given God credit. In the very moment that I took credit for myself, I learned. And now, some people say, well, I don't believe that. God doesn't work that way. So, well, you can say whatever you want. I know God works in different ways with different people, but I know how he worked with me. And I can give you other examples that are just profound, just as profound, that happened earlier in my life. And I called Bobby on the phone and said, explain to her what happened. And the first thing she said, you better not be scheduling any more talks. We know where you got your help. And I quit giving talks at that time for many, many years. You asked me to comment a little bit about how to stay small in your own eyes, how to give God credit. And I can tell you, as much as I can look outside and see whether it's cloudy or a sunny day, I can tell you the solution is to be humble before God. It's the only solution. And he deals differently, more strict, less strict with different people. But if a person understands this and understands it and asks God and begs God to keep you in a good and a humble place, and to give you warnings if you're getting out of place, and people who are close to you, ask them and just say, if I ever get cocky, if I ever get proud, if I ever get out of place, you tell me, and tell me quickly, because you don't want to get off the path. It's possible to slip once in a while, but I guess you can compare it to an alcoholic, a recovering alcoholic. You can't get too far off the path, otherwise you're in trouble. And so just like an alcoholic is always an alcoholic, whether they're recovering, well, in life, depending on your childhood and how you bring up your personality, we're all having weakness towards ego and wanting to give ourselves credit. But according to the rules of life that we didn't set up, especially if we have been given hearts to serve other people and have empathy towards other people and want to show kindness to people at all times and inspired to do that, then we have to keep ourselves in the right place. And we should be motivated to stay in the right place, because when we're in the right place, realizing that we're just the conduit, we're just the vehicle for the message, then the message goes out in full force. But when we take control of our life and let our mind take control of our hearts instead of our hearts taking control of our minds, then we're missing out in our goal in life, and that's to serve and help other people. And I'll be 72 in February, and as the years go by, I realize more and more that our main purpose in life, of course, somebody can say a lot of things about what I talked about here, that's your opinion, that's it, that's fine. I'm just telling you that what I've experienced, and I know it works and it's real. That all through life, if a person wants to find happiness, wants to have success in life, even if you're not in a mode to wanting to inspire people like is in Brent's art, but even if you want to find normal happiness, it's related to three things. Number one, work on getting a burning desire to love and obey and follow the creator of the universe. Whatever you picture him to be, want to serve others. Any chance you can. And because we can control our thoughts, even though you may not have that natural, you can develop. You can even set up a rule. I'm not going to go to bed at night until I have done something on this earth to cheer up one person. If it's 5 after 12, you're going to bed, you don't know what to do. Then you think of somebody that you know on the West Coast that hasn't gone to bed yet, and you call them up and talk to them and cheer them up. Set up some rules. Discipline yourself. And pretty soon it will become natural to you. The third thing is kindness. It's like, Brenda, you probably remember or heard about the three-legged milking stool before milking machines. One leg of the three-legged milking stool isn't there, it doesn't work very well. You need all three legs. You need a burning desire to serve God, creator of the universe. It has nothing to do with the country you're in, with religion you're in, whether you're worshiping a tree. If you have a sincere desire to please the creator of the universe, you're in the right place. And when your spirit departs your body, you will realize that it'll be confirmed. The second thing is to develop a heart to serve other people. And the third thing is kindness. Legs, three-legged milking stool. That's the secret to happiness in life. And any time that we get off that, we're going to be troubled. And so when we're troubled, be thankful for it. When you're writing down the things you're thankful for, and draw the line of the things that you're troubled about or wrong in life, because they are there for a purpose. They are there to keep us on the right track so we can fulfill the life purpose for our life. The greatest freedom we have is the freedom to choose your attitude regardless of the circumstances. The goal of prayer is not so much to obtain the desired help as to reassure ourselves of God's nearness in all moments of distress. The awareness of this nearness is in itself the answer to prayer. One more time. The goal of prayer is not so much to obtain the desired help as to reassure ourselves God's nearness in all moments of distress. And the awareness of this nearness is in itself the answer to prayer. And when that can settle in your heart, and I say that over and over, every single morning I say that at least once, because we live in a culture where that's not common, it's not easy to live that. But it helps us realize that getting what we want is not necessarily what's best for us. The awareness of his nearness is in itself the answer to prayer. And when you're covered with that cloak, that protection, you'll be ready for anything that comes along. And people don't become what we say, what we tell them they should do, nearly as much as people become what we are, who we are, how do we handle ourselves in each situation. And that's the way it is with raising children. Our children become not what we tell them, they become what we are. So, I talked a little longer than I thought. Sorry for getting a little emotional. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer any question you may have. Or if you'd like me to elaborate on any